Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 115 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing great. Can you believe 115 episodes?
Man, I can't. 115.
It's staggering. When you put that together with Unsolved, you know, that it's 210 episodes, give or take. That's a lot of episodes.
That is a lot of episodes, man.
So how you been?
I've been good.
That's good. Yep. Love to hear it.
Doing well.
I know you and I are both struggling with the weather. It's 40 degrees. It's negative 10. I don't know what in the heck is going on.
My body's not sure what it wants to do.
You don't have a winter coat, I hear.
I don't have a winter coat. I'm braving. I'm toughing it out.
Hey, everybody, Gibby's too cheap to buy a winter coat.
I know it.
He needs help. No, I'm just messing. We got a jam-packed episode.
We do.
We also have received a lot of new Patreon support, especially this month, which is awesome.
It's beautiful.
But what it has done is it's put us a little even further behind than what we already were. So we're a good 3 weeks, maybe more, on names. So just putting that out there. I know sometimes people are wondering why they haven't heard their name, but you know, look back at when you signed up and it's going to be at least 3 weeks. So we had Kay Peek.
Hey, Kay.
Amanda Scruggs.
And Amanda. She's a good friend.
Yep. Big on social media.
Yep.
Caitlin Ray.
Hey, Caitlin.
Chelsea Sampson.
Ooh, thank you.
Sonora Jelks.
Ooh, Sonora. That's all you need to say.
Looks just like Senora without the tilde.
With that fancy little woo-woo-doo.
That's a tilde.
Yeah.
Mike.
Just Mike.
Just Mike.
That's all you need.
Joan Elton.
Hey, Joan.
Kathleen Ritchie.
Hey, thanks, Kathleen.
Mitch Lonis.
Hey, Mitch.
Remember Mitch?
Oh, yeah.
The birthday Mitch boy?
Yeah, thank
he,
you.
He became a Patreon after we gave him that shout out, and then he just upped it to the highest level. So that's appreciate amazing. That. Critical Onions.
Yeah, a good band.
Sounds like a cool band name.
Yeah.
Ivy Lee.
Hey, thanks, Ivy.
Brendan McLaughlin.
Thank you.
Randy Biard.
Hey, Biard.
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 I don't know.
Something maybe like a pirate.
Yard. Yard. Maximiliano Encinas. That is a kick-ass name.
No, Maximilianos.
And he jumped out at our highest level.
He doesn't even need the last name. He gets by just with the first name.
Yeah, you could. You could just go share with that name. Apple Fatty.
All right, Apple.
I don't know exactly what that means, but makes me chuckle.
Apple Bottom Fatty. I don't know. I'm just rolling with
Apple Bottom.
I don't know.
Jeans.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Something.
Emma Bowd.
Hey, Emma.
Crystal Carey.
Oh, that's cool.
Amy Frost.
Hey, Amy. Cold out there.
Stephanie Nakasone.
Nakasone.
Ciaran Corbett.
Hey, Ciaran.
Nia Moore.
One more.
Whitney.
Just Whitney?
Just Whitney.
Yeah, that's all you need with a name
Lindsay
like that.
Lindsay Nielsen.
Hey, Lindsay.
Jerry Mangori.
McGorry.
Sarah Mudd.
Hey, thanks, Sarah.
Natalie Sitzler.
Ooh, Natalie.
And Molly Villarreal.
Thank you.
So a lot of great support. Let's go back into the vault, Gibbs. This week we selected Drea Ronell.
Thanks, Drea.
Been with us a long time, and we appreciate that. The new support, the continued support. We had a lot of PayPal support as well. Allison Thompson, our friend.
Oh, yeah, our good buddy Allison. Thank you.
Had dinner with at CrimeCon. Yeah. She gave us a real nice PayPal donation.
Thank you.
Jennifer Gunnan.
She's gunning for somebody.
She's for you, maybe. Deborah Pfeiffer.
Hey, Deborah.
Jennifer Murray.
Thanks. Oh, Jennifer. Yeah, yep. Thank you.
Karen Washington.
Hey, thanks,
Karen. And Jennifer Warmuth.
Ooh, Warmuth is out there.
So we appreciate everyone. It's a big help to us, allows us to keep putting out these podcasts. Don't forget, if you're going to CrimeCon, Crime All The Time 19.
Yeah.
That's our code. If you're signing up, I think you get 10% off the standard badge price if you use our code.
Take it.
So, yeah.
When we're seeing you there. Or have a meetup. We'll do the meetup.
There's a lot of people going. I've heard from a lot of people.
Meetup might be a little bit bigger. You're go live like you did last time.
That was fun.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going live. I know you're going live. You don't have a choice.
Now, we have a new episode of True Crime All The Time Unsolved out right now, and it's on Monique Daniels.
Yeah.
This one's pretty mysterious. It's the disappearance of Monique. They're not really sure what happened to her, but then you get into kind of a family dynamic, Gibbs. People start looking at the family. It's a very interesting case.
No, I found it really intriguing. I mean, I really got pulled into it when I was researching it.
So I think people like it. Check that out. But we've got to jump right in. I'm telling you, we are jam-packed. In this episode, we're talking about Joseph Naso, the double initial killer, the alphabet killer, the double monogram killer. Man, we just love, as a society, to give monikers to serial killers.
We do, man.
And it's almost like outlets are jumping over each other to outdo the other one. We can't even just stick with one half the time. Somebody's got to come out with another one, then somebody else comes out with another one. Before you know it, this killer's got four or five different nicknames.
Nicknames, yeah. The only things you see that in is either serial killers or superheroes. That's it.
Pretty much polar opposites.
Yeah.
In Naso, we're talking about a serial rapist turned serial killer, but this guy got away with his crimes for many years. We know he killed in the 70s. We know he killed in the 90s. But what really fascinated me about this case is, Naso kept a diary. He kept journals. He kept pictures. He kept a lot of stuff, stretching all the way back to the 1950s that indicate he was a serial predator for more than 40 years and could be extremely prolific. They have no idea what the true number is of crimes that this guy's committed.
Yeah, I just found it amazing that he lasted as long as he did.
And police are going to get a hold of this information, the diary, the journals, and we're going to talk about, some of the entries throughout the episode. But again, 40 years or more worth of crimes.
Yeah.
Here. Who knows how many women, because that's who Naso targeted, how many women this guy may have victimized over the years.
It's like a hobby for him. Sounds like he needed to, instead go to, Michael's and get art supplies and do some art therapy.
Maybe he should have taken up crochet or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, all of the kind of nicknames, monikers that we mentioned, they all center around the fact that most of his murder victims, their first and last name started with the same letter. He was a photographer. And like we've talked about in many cases, use that to his advantage in luring his victims. And this guy had a very specific victim type. Number one, he had a thing for nylons. He had a thing for heels.
Okay.
That was his big turn on. You want to say it that way.
Well, he would like the guy that we did up in Canada.
I think Naso and Colonel Williams would have got along very well.
Been a cute little couple, wouldn't
it? Yeah, they'd have been a cute couple.
Yeah.
There's quite an age gap, but I think they could have made it work.
Yeah, it's not always about the age.
But for a couple of reasons, this is a strange story. Number one, just how much time it spans. You have Joe's age. I mentioned all of the things, his diaries, journals, his photos. So because of that, we're going to tell this story a little differently. We're not going to start with background like we normally do. We're going to start this story off when Joe Naso hits police radar. We're going to mix it up a little. You okay with that?
I'm good with that.
All righty. It was April 2010. 76-year-old Joe Naso was on probation for a 2008 conviction for theft. He's 76 years old.
Yeah,
that's up there. At the age of 74, he was convicted. He wasn't really slowing down a whole lot, I don't think. In 2010, Joe lived just north of Reno, Nevada. Now, as part of that conviction in 2008, probation officers had the ability to make surprise inspections at his home. And they chose to do that because they started to get some information that Naso was selling ammunition at flea markets. Obviously, a clear violation of his parole. And it was at one of these surprise inspections in April 2010 that officers made a discovery at his home that sent this whole story into motion. So they go into his house. The first thing they encountered was what was described as just a filthy, filthy house.
Just nasty and dirty.
It looked like an episode of Hoarders. There was junk everywhere. Apparently, Gibbs, there was rotting meat just laying around on kitchen counters.
Okay.
Now, I get maybe not being the cleanest person in the world, not wanting to pick up after yourself, but let's not leave rotted meat out, can we?
No, I get it. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're not going to do the everyday cleaning, you know, maybe you got a little dust build up here and there. But yeah, like you say, raw, or anything spoiled. Yeah, out on the counter?
My wife gets on me when I don't put my coat up, when I leave my shoes out.
She gets on me.
Yeah, she does. She gets on you too. But no way am I going to live where I can't walk through the house. No way am I going to want to smell, you know,
rotting
just
food.
Rancid, rotted meat.
Yeah, I don't want to open up the fridge either and have something hit me in the face like...
No, because you do eat here once a week, so...
I know.
Got that, yeah. Too.
I always, when did you get this... When did you buy that hamburger? Okay.
They found ammunition and guns, and that was it, right? That's all they needed to find. Probation violation. Joe Naso is off to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. It's over. Now, probation violations, they happen all the time, right? Some people might say those types of things are fairly routine, but what they found was just the beginning.
Yeah.
Because as they're walking through the house, they start uncovering banker's boxes full of pictures and notebooks. They found over $150,000 in cash, a whole bunch of newspaper clippings, women's driver's licenses, passports, things, you know, ID cards, things like that.
Things a normal person wouldn't have.
Shouldn't have. It's starting to pique their interest. And when I say photos, we're talking about thousands and thousands of photographs of women.
Now,
I mentioned he was a photographer.
Yeah.
But I've seen the number maybe in the 5,000 range.
That's pretty high.
Pretty high.
Even for somebody at his age.
Now, some of the women were clothed
in
these pictures, but most of them weren't.
Right. Let me guess. They were wearing nylons and heels.
Well, a lot of them were. Some of them were wearing lingerie. Some of them were, you know, buck naked. But what really kind of sent up the big time red flags was that there were women, quite a few in these photographs, that appeared as though they were either unconscious or dead. You know, just from looking at it, they, you know, real quick, they couldn't really tell. And the age ranges of these women, I guess, Gibbs, they spanned quite a bit, right? All the way from like 20s to 80s.
That's a big gap, man.
It's a big range.
Yeah. Well, then also it depends on when he took the pictures, right? Because some of these pictures could have been when he was
much younger.
So his audience was younger. And now his audience is a little bit older, you know. But then again, you know, 70-some-year-old photographer could could get a 20, 30-year-old to pose for him. Just depends on how naive they are and if he's offering cash.
But then you get to the notebooks, and these are filled with Naso's writings. I mean, this guy was like the Stephen King of journaling.
Well, that's a big name, man.
You know how many books Stephen King writes? I think he writes one about every month.
He's almost like that other guy that writes all the time.
Oh, you mean that other guy?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Yeah. His damn commercials are on all the time. He's always writing another book. Like, how many books can you write?
He's got commercials?
Yeah, he's always advertising his book. Patterson. James Patterson.
Oh, James Patterson.
He's always got a book coming out.
He does write quite a bit, but nobody's like Stephen King.
He's successful, Stephen King.
Yeah, but he's very prolific.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that Naso was, you know, like Kevin Spacey's character in Seven. Remember that, Gibbs?
Oh, yeah.
With all his journals. But I don't know if he was that far off.
You always wonder why they keep these journals, you know? Knowing that, I mean, it's just their confidence level, I guess, that they can journal all this stuff thinking that they're never going to get caught.
Yeah, I think that's it.
But they all do it. I mean, at one level or the other. This is extreme level here.
Oh, this is very extreme.
But, I mean, we've talked about other ones, you know, that have done it, and they keep their little journal and their little souvenir box of items, and you just wonder why. Why would you want to ever risk?
Well, because I think the power to relive it is stronger than their concern about somebody finding it.
Right.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
You know, as police start sifting through these, they realize that Joe Naso had detailed out hundreds and hundreds of sexual assaults. Again, we talked about it. This spans more than 40 years. Eventually, authorities are going to come out and they're going to refer to some of these journals and writings as kind of his rape diary. That's what they called it. He filled the notebooks with descriptions of how he stalked and sexually assaulted women through the years. And the oldest one they found, Gibbs, was from 1950. 1950.
Wow.
He would have only been about 16 years old.
That tells you something right there.
And then the most recent entries. Now, when I say entries, I'm not talking about when he wrote them down. I'm talking about the description of the actual crime itself. The most recent was from the late 90s, maybe even into the early 2000s.
Okay.
So again,
50 years.
That's how you get to that 40, 50 year time frame. But one thing that's interesting about the writing is that police determined that most of them were not written as they happened, right? He wasn't sitting down as a 16-year-old writing out what he had done. It was almost as if in his 70s, he had stopped his crimes. I don't know if he was, at some point he thought, you know, he was too old, but that's when he sat down and began to relive everything. And he thought back to his earliest crimes and just kind of kept going through. He didn't do them in order, right? They could tell by looking at the notebooks. When he thought of one, he would write it down. So it wasn't like he went...
They
weren't in chronological order. It was also reported that he had some Herb Baumeister-like mannequins.
Really?
Sure. He would dress them up in hose and lingerie. He would put lipstick on them. In the garage, they found suitcases full of mannequin legs that had pantyhose, different types of hosiery on them. It's pretty far out there.
Yeah.
You know, this is the point in the story where if I was Ron Popeil or if I was the ShamWow guy,
yeah,
I would be saying, but wait, there's more.
There's more.
Because there is. Authorities also found what would become known as the List of 10. And this is really the main reason why I wanted to start the podcast out this way. This List of 10 that Joe Naso wrote down that he either murdered or wanted to murder. Most people think he probably murdered most of these women. We're going to talk about the 10. So this happened in April of 2010. They spent about a year investigating Joe Naso. You figure it's a lot of shit to go through.
A lot of stuff.
Boxes and boxes full of journals that have to be read, pictures that have to be analyzed, trying to figure out who they were, this list of 10, trying to investigate that. You know, just to give you an example, there were so many of them, but one said, girl in North Buffalo Woods. She was real pretty. Front seat of my car. Had to knock her out first. 1958.
Wow.
I mean, this is the kind of writing that we're talking about. Imagine being one of the police officers and just having to sit through and read all, you know, and some of them were very, very graphic. Another one read, Selena, Kansas girl. I followed and met at Fred Astaire dance studio. She was gorgeous. Great legs in nylons and heels. Had to rape her in my car on a cold winter night. Snowstorm.
Had to.
Had to.
Had to rape her in my car.
That's what he wrote. Had to.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at all these writings and the pictures and you look at everything in totality, it linked Joe Naso conclusively to 4 unsolved murders in California. Roxine Rogash and Carmen Colon in the 1970s, and then Tracy Tafoya and Pamela Parsons in the 1990s. All 4 of these women, police believe, were on the list of 10. You have to keep in mind, this list is not a bunch of names, right? It's kind of like what I just read. Girl in parking lot. But there was enough description, and we'll talk about in detail when we talk about these 4.
Tied into.
Yeah, that they could figure out who he was talking about on some of them. So they go through this year-long investigation. Joe was arrested in April of 2011. And it talked about it up front. Very odd that he sought out women that had the same initial for their first and last name. So he's charged with the 4 murders. But authorities suspected him of committing more murders and many more sexual assaults. They came out and said that Joe Naso's MO was to pick up sex workers, sometimes posing as a photographer, take them to a remote area and strangle them.
Okay.
That's what they believe he did. And the other thing that you have to think about, these murders were cold cases. Some of these went back to the 1970s. They were very, very cold. Police had not been able to solve them. Would they have solved them if they didn't stumble upon this treasure trove of information at Joe Naso's house? Gibbs, I don't know if they would have.
I don't think they would have.
Because this is what led them to the information that they needed. So they interviewed Joe's neighbors around the area that he was living close to Reno. And the same description came up over and over. He was weird. It's what neighbors said. He didn't socialize. He didn't wave. He had lived in that neighborhood for about 10 years. And all neighbors really knew about him was that, number one, he drove a black Ford pickup truck. And for some reason, the sheriff was at his house quite often.
So right now, it sounds like you.
Yeah, very, very similar to me. I don't wave. I don't socialize.
Got your black pickup
truck. I have a black truck.
Yeah. And this local.
And the local police are at my house quite a bit.
Yeah.
The other thing that neighbors said was that his adult son, Charles, lived with him for some period of time, but then some years before had moved out and they hadn't seen him. Now, after Joe was arrested, he received a visit in jail from his ex-wife, and police recorded their conversation. And during this conversation, Joe tried to get his ex-wife to have their son, Charlie, go to Joe's house to get some safe deposit keys. And his exact quote was, I've got things in there that are private.
Oh.
So, ding, ding, ding. Police want to know what that is.
Yeah, what too?
And as soon as they hear it, well, they just go to his house because he had given directions on how to find the keys. They just go get the keys, open up the safe deposit box, and inside they found a whole trove of more pictures, IDs, driver's licenses, all kinds of stuff. But these were all of women. One in particular was a passport and driver's license of a woman named Sarah Dillon. Her original name was Renee Shapiro, but she changed her last name to Dillon because she loved Bob Dylan. Just like I know there are some people that have changed their last name to Gibson.
Sure. Why not?
Because of their love of you.
Can you? I mean, why would you just want to stop them?
Did I just compare you to Bob Dylan?
But, I mean, Bob to me.
Yeah. But Sarah was on her way to a Bob Dylan concert in 1992 when she disappeared. And inside the safe deposit box, they found a handwritten note from NASO with the date of the concert. That was the last date that Sarah Dillon was seen. And this is why I wanted to start this episode out a little differently, so that I could talk about what they found first, talk about the list of 10, because police believe that Sarah Dillon is number 3 on NASO's list of 10. There's an entry that reads, "Girl in Woodland, Nevada County." Police believe that Joe NASO picked her up hitchhiking and murdered her. Now, he was never charged with her murder, but from all the evidence that they gathered, they believe that she's number 3 on the list of 10. All right, Gibbs, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsors. And the first one is Warby Parker, founded with the goal of creating boutique quality eyewear at a revolutionary price point. Every pair is custom fit with anti-reflective polycarbonate prescription lenses, and their glasses start at $95. And that price includes prescription lenses. What I found amazing about Warby Parker is their free home try-on program. So you go on the website, you order 5 pairs of glasses, they ship them to you, you get to try them on for 5 days. No obligation to buy. They even include a prepaid return shipping label. All you have to do is go to warbyparker.com/TCAT to order your free home try-ons today. And then once you pick one that you want, you send all 5 back, you go on the website, you tell them which one you want, you upload your prescription. Amazing. For every pair you buy, a pair is distributed to someone in need. And the experience was so easy. I walked through it with my wife, so we ordered her a new pair of glasses, and my wife was amazed at the quality of the glasses. She picked out the one that she wanted, and they're on their way. So again, go to warbyparker.com/TCAT to order your free home try-ons today. And next up is ZipRecruiter. Gibbs, you know what's not smart? Posting a job on job boards that just assume qualified candidates will see and apply to your job post. Not smart. You know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/TCAT to hire the right person. Because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, and it actively invites them to apply to your job. So you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number 1 by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/TCAT. If you love this show, show your support to it and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TCAT, T-C-A-T-T, that's ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/TCAT. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, so let's go back to the very beginning. Not a lot on NASO's childhood. He was born in 34 in New York. He grew up in the Rochester area of New York, and this is significant because we're going to talk about some murders there later on. He served in the Air Force. But in 1958, at the age of 24, Joe was charged with second-degree assault and attempted rape in East Rochester. His accuser was a 21-year-old woman who told authorities she met Joe at a dance sometime earlier. But on the night of April 24th, he saw her at a bus stop, pulled over, asked her if she wanted to ride. She said, sure, got in the car. And that's when Joe drove to a park and attacked her. Now, she got away and turned him in. He was arrested, and he eventually pleaded guilty. But what did NASO get, Gibbs?
Oh, just probation.
Sure. Yeah, he got 5 years probation.
Okay.
The judge did give him a 2.5 to 5 year sentence in Attica, no less.
Yeah, remember that.
Attica. But he suspended the sentence. So NASO's not going to do any time, right? Probation and a suspended sentence. Now, if he messes up, he's going to Attica.
Yeah, but he's got to get caught.
Well, I should say that. Yeah, you're right. If he messes up and he gets caught messing up. But Naso's diary or his journal, whatever you want to call it, has an entry that says Rochester, 1958, picking up a gorgeous chick at a bus stop, headed for the cemetery, and started to kiss and molest her. I had to force her down and hold her skirt up, her girdle down. It was hard work.
It was rough. That's what he's saying.
It was hard work.
It was rough to violate her.
This guy's something. I'm not kidding you. He's a full-blown narcissist. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But he went on to say, because again, he's writing this later. To this day, I love her. I wish I could have married her.
Wow, how messed up is that?
That's warped.
Yeah. Yeah, she really enjoyed you violating her, mister. She would want to marry you. What world are you in?
If you're in love with somebody and you would like to marry them...
You don't rape them.
You don't assault them. You court them. Maybe chocolates, roses, some warm massage oil, you know.
I was just going to say open the door for him.
Put on some Barry White.
You went with massage oil.
I did. Some Barry White.
I mean, I see it up there by your side of your chair all the time.
Stay out of my secret room. How many times I got to tell you that? I
don't know why it's by your recliner chair.
But I just found that so warped that he would word it that way. And yeah. There's going to be a whole bunch of other entries like
clearly
that.
His perception and what he has in his mind as a relationship is really messed up.
Oh, it is. There's no doubt. But he wanted to marry this woman. I think he got charged with rape one other time. But again, no jail time. Police essentially told him, you know what? Just leave.
Get out of town.
Get out of town. Leave the Rochester, New York area, or we're going to arrest you. I don't know. It was kind of unimaginable to think that's what things were like back then. That, you know, a sexual crime would be treated with such disregard.
Yeah.
But I think it was.
I think it was too. I mean, I think you can see a lot of case history back in that time frame and just shake your head a lot that just really wasn't taken that too seriously.
No, I really don't believe it was. But one thing's for sure, it was time for Joe to get out of New York. And he did. He left for California. Joe met and married a woman named Judith. They had a son together named Charlie. I've already talked about his ex-wife and his son. That's them. They lived in the Bay Area of California. And eventually, Joe became what he called a professional photographer.
Yeah. He got some business cards made up.
Sure. He said, I'm a professional photographer. Now, I believe he was anything but professional, but apparently he did make some money taking wedding photos, other types of photos. He also made money by doing some dumpster diving. Now, I know this is something you like to do, Gibbs, find odds and ends and resell them at flea markets and things like that.
Absolutely.
No, I'm giving you a hard time, but a lot of people do that. You know, it's a way to make some money.
I saw it every day as a UPS driver.
Yeah.
People in dumpsters, you know, either digging out things to resell or digging out their dinner.
Well, they say one person's trash is another person's treasure.
You got to see the stuff they pull out behind Kroger's.
But Joe apparently had some booths at various flea markets around the Bay Area, but he still had family back in Rochester, and he would travel back and forth quite frequently between New York and California. It was in the early 70s, three young girls, all with the same initials for their first and last name, were found raped and strangled. You know, this is what is known as the New York alphabet murders.
Absolutely.
It's a pretty big unsolved case from the early 70s. So it was 10-year-old Carmen Colon, disappeared on November 16th, 1971. She was found 2 days later. Very interesting that one of Joe Naso's known murder victims later in California had this exact same name.
The exact same name?
Carmen Colon. Exactly. Spelled exactly the same.
Well, that is, I don't think you could say that's a coincidence.
Can you say it's a coincidence?
I can say it's not a coincidence.
Or, oh, why would you try to say that word? But amazing.
It is amazing. That's unbelievable.
It's almost unbelievable, but it's true. 11-year-old Michelle Manza disappeared on November 26th, found 2 days later. 11-year-old Wanda Wolkowitz disappeared April 2nd, was found the next day.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get too much into this. You and I might do this case on
Unsolved.
On Unsolved. But I mentioned it, right? The New York double initial, the New York alphabet murders. It's got a couple of different names.
Safe to say he would line up as a suspect in those.
Yeah. Police interviewed hundreds of people in the case. I mean, they interviewed Kenneth Bianchi, who would later become the, you know, one of the Hillside Stranglers. We profiled him. But they couldn't pin these three murders on anyone. Now, after 2010, when Naso is arrested and they find all this stuff in his house, investigators in New York, they worked really hard to try to connect him to these unsolved murders. So first of all, you have the double initials. That stood out. And the fact that he had family there, they could put him in the area at the time of some of these murders, I believe. But these were also very young girls. And that was not something that, in everything they found in his house, there was no indications he was a pedophile. So that was kind of different.
Right.
And then ultimately, his DNA didn't match DNA that was found on some of the victims. But there are still people that believe he had something to do with these murders. You know, maybe there was somebody else with him and it's that person's DNA. Unbelievable coincidence, as you would say.
Coincidence.
That, you know, he's in the area. These girls all had, you know, the same letters for their first and last names. One of them has the exact same name as one of his later victims. Very strange.
It all ties together for me.
His wife is later going to testify at trial that their marriage was horrible. And she's going to do a pretty good job of painting this guy as a monster. But as the marriage was falling apart, they're still married, but it's not good. We're getting into the 1970s. It's known that Joseph Naso is out hunting women. And his first known murder victim was 18-year-old Roxine Rogash. She was 5'2". She had really red hair. Her body was found in January of 1977, dumped near Lagunitas, California. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, Gibbs, but that's what I'm going with.
I think you got it right.
Police believe that Rogash was involved in the sex industry, but this is something that her family has vehemently denied over the years. But police are, you know, they came out and said that they had some information about that. She was found strangled with a pair of nylon stockings wrapped around her neck. And the kicker is that DNA found on both the stockings she was wearing and those wrapped around her neck would later be tied to Joseph Naso. Police believe that Roxine was number 3 on the list of 10 with an entry that read girl near Lagunitas. But it's really her case that's going to solidify the state's case against him and all the murders.
Right.
Hers is the most damning by far. And we'll get into it a little bit when we talk about the trial. Then you had 22-year-old Carmen Colon. Again, this is the woman that had the exact same name, exact same spelling as the little girl in New York years earlier. She was found in August of 1978 near Port Costa, California. Her body was pretty badly decomposed to the point that it was unidentifiable. She was a known sex worker. Police knew that she had been arrested before. So they got her booking fingerprints from when she was arrested.
Yeah.
And that's how they identified her. Now, Carmen was number 2 on the list of 10. Naso's entry read, girl near Port Costa. So pretty easy for them to figure out.
Sure, they can tag that one.
So those are the two known murders during the 1970s committed by Joe Naso. And we'll touch on it a little bit, Gibbs. But again, I have no idea what this guy's true number is, it could be very, very high. Sexual assaults, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
My theory is he committed a lot more murders than what they can actually tie him to.
Yeah. No wonder Judith files for divorce.
Yeah.
You know, in 79.
Well, the marriage is shit. She says that later on.
Oh. It's a whole higher level of infidelity, what he's doing. Right?
Yeah.
I don't think
she knows that part. But
no, you know, but
I think she thinks he's a bastard and I'm getting the heck out of here.
He's a bastard. You bastard. So she files in what, 79, and it's finalized in 1980.
And it's around this same time that their son Charlie, he's in his 20s. He's diagnosed with schizophrenia. And it would turn out that Joe Naso would take care of Charlie throughout, you know, much of his life.
Yeah. And to that point, I mean, after the divorce, Joe decides to move, and he'll move all the way out to San Francisco. And he kind of gets a little nickname going there with all his neighbors. Now he's not just Joe, he's Crazy Joe.
Yeah, they called him Crazy Joe. I don't know if it was just San Francisco. I think, again, everywhere he went, people thought he was odd.
Yeah.
I just know in San Francisco, they literally called him Crazy Joe.
Here comes Crazy Joe.
There goes Crazy Joe.
Yeah.
People said that he had a bad temper and displayed all kinds of odd behavior. One woman that Joe Naso seemed fixated on was Margaret Prisco. She lived in the same apartment building as he did in San Francisco. When they find all of his notebooks, Gibbs, they found 3 notebooks completely filled with his descriptions, which were very graphic.
Wow.
Of things that he wanted to do to this woman.
Just her.
Just her.
She had her own
notebook.
Volume 1, volume 2, volume 3.
She had 3 volumes.
Can you imagine being her, like 30 years later, to find out about this?
Police call you and say, hey, did you know a guy named Joe Naso? She's going to say, I remember him, Crazy Joe.
He knew you pretty well. We got 3 volumes of books about you and what he wanted to do to you.
What he wanted to do. And it, you know, I don't know all the details, but it was very graphic. But he didn't, right? He never hurt this woman.
Thank goodness for her. Others would not be so lucky.
No. In 1981, the body of 56-year-old Sherilia Patton washed ashore in Tiburon, California. She had been strangled. Her body was placed into 2 plastic garbage bags. And authorities believe that Patton is number 7 on Naso's list of 10. The entry only read, lady from 839 Leavenworth. Not much to go on.
No. And unfortunate for her, I mean, the whole reason she went out there, San Francisco, was just to look for a job. And imagine running into this guy and, you know, the luck that she had. It's terrible.
But it was her search for a job that tied her to the entry on Naso's list, because she had been going around applying for jobs, and on the applications, she listed her address as 839 Leavenworth. Well, it just so happened that at the time, Joe Naso was the manager of the building at 839 Leavenworth. And he was never charged with her murder.
No, he got lucky on this one.
They did find some pictures of her, I believe, in his house. But what's strange about this one, Gibbs, is he was the prime suspect. Back in 1981, the police just never could put enough together on him to charge him.
Could never put enough physical evidence.
No, they thought it was him. They had a good idea it was him. They just didn't have enough to actually charge him with it. They wouldn't find out till 30 years later. So then we get into the 1990s. Naso lived in Yuba City, California. Well, in 1993, the body of 38-year-old Pamela Parsons was found by some people. They were just kind of walking, you know, down the road, off the side of the road. They found her body.
Yeah.
And she had been strangled. When police interviewed her friends, they said that she did occasionally work as a sex worker, because she had a drug habit, and she did that to get money to feed that habit. But investigators in 2010 found pictures of Pamela Parsons inside Naso's house.
Yeah.
On top of that, they also found a bunch of newspaper clippings of her disappearance, of them finding the body.
The one picture that they found was disturbing.
Well, it was, because it was one of the ones I kind of mentioned up front. She appeared dead, right? There were a number of pictures of women, but investigators really couldn't tell. They were unconscious. They were dead. It was hard to tell. But with Pamela Parsons, they said that, you know, number one, her face seemed unnatural. And I think probably the big thing is they said her skin showed some discoloration.
Yeah. It didn't look good.
No, it was like lividity, you know, setting in. But again, you look back at all this stuff they find in Naso's house, you know, there's an entry that says September 15th, stayed in Yuba City all day long, took care of some old business. Well, September 15th just happened to be the last day that anyone saw Pamela Parsons alive. Authorities believe that Parsons is number 9. On the list of 10, her entry listed as girl from Linda, Yuba County. Took care of some old business. The very next year, 1994, the body of 31-year-old Tracy Tafoya was found just off Highway 70 in some weeds. She was found naked, face down, pretty close to Marysville Cemetery. Tracy was a mother of 5. Who police said had developed a drug habit. And again, investigators found pictures of her as well.
Newspaper clippings too.
Sure. You can probably figure out this is not going to be much of a trial, right? They have a wealth of evidence against Naso. Now, the trial is going to be interesting for other reasons.
But no, but I mean, with the, you know, journaling this information, giving them timelines.
Sure.
And enough descriptions, and to pair it up with the photographs and the news clippings, it's hard to deny that you didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Why would you have descriptions in your journal? Why would you have pictures? And why would you have news clippings, you know?
Exactly. So he also had a entry that was marked August 6th, and he wrote, picked up a nice broad in Marysville, 4 p.m., she came over 4 hours, took photographs, nice legs. She ripped me off. Met Tracy, put it to her.
Okay.
This is what the entry said. Put right. it to her. I think you could make a couple of different things out of that. One being sexual, the other being murderous.
Yeah, say either way you go, it's not good.
It's not going to be good. It's almost enough to send chills down your spine that this man, years later, thinking back about, you know, some horrific things that he did, kind of so cavalier, so nonchalant in the way that he journals about these things. And Gibbs, just like with Pamela Parsons, August 6th, you know, the date that he has down in his journal is the last date that anyone saw Tracy alive. Now, there is some conflicting information about whether Tracy was involved in any type of sex work. Some authorities have said that she was, others said no. But I think it's safe to say that Tracy was number 10.
Yeah.
On the list of 10. Because the entry read, girl, MRSV Cemetery, Marysville Cemetery.
Absolutely.
Not too hard to figure that out.
No.
When you put that together with the date. So we've covered the 4 murders that Joe Naso is going to be charged with, right? 4 counts of murders, all with special circumstances. He pleaded not guilty, and he went on trial June 18th, 2013. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. detection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy, or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. Now, I said the trial is probably not going to be much, but it does kind of turn into a circus sideshow. The prosecution presented what was some pretty compelling evidence. Right. So they had 70 to 80 witnesses during this trial. Some of these were women who testified that they had been assaulted by Joe Naso. Some of these assaults, again, went back 20, 30 years. Prosecutors told the jury about how Naso's DNA was found on the pantyhose that Rogash was wearing when her body was found, which I mentioned, right? DNA was going to tie back to him. What I didn't say, and what, you know, what came out at trial, was that his ex-wife's DNA, so Judith's DNA, was found on the pantyhose wrapped around Rogash's neck. So he left his DNA on the pantyhose she was wearing.
Right.
He used his wife's pantyhose to murder this 18-year-old girl.
Yeah, it's terrible.
They introduced DNA evidence found under Carmen Colon's fingernails. That tied back to Naso. You got to figure, this is 2013, right?
Right.
DNA, they're able to test all this. If he would have been caught in the 70s.
Might have got off.
Might be a different story. Maybe they don't have the ammunition to put him away, but they do now. Or they did in 2013. They also showed the jury, you know, some of the very graphic photos of the victims. They put up his list of 10 on like a projection screen, and prosecutors went through them line by line, focusing on the ones that they knew. Obviously the four women with whose murders he was charged with, but also the two others that we talked about, Sarah Dillon and Sherilia Patton.
Right.
They were sure. They were pretty sure about those. Now, they chose not to charge him. But you and I have talked about that in a number of cases. There's always reasons for that. You know, how solid is the evidence? Is that going to muddy the waters? Make it harder to get the conviction for these four? You don't need these two if they're not as strong.
Right. You got to go with the strongest ones.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different reasons for why that can happen.
Here in Marin County, during opening statements of accused serial killer Joseph Naso's murder trial, prosecutors presented graphic photos of all four victims. They had been left naked on the side of the road. The photos of their decomposing bodies were so disturbing that some jurors looked away and one fought back tears.
We've talked about it before, Gibbs. It's a hell of a thing for a citizen to be asked to do. Right? Sit on this jury, look at things that you don't want to see.
Nobody wants to see.
Nobody wants to see, but you're compelled to view this evidence, and you can hear the reporter say it. You know, some people had to look away. One juror was fighting back tears. It's not easy. Tracy Tafoya's husband took the stand and was able to identify her from body photos taken from Naso's house. One thing that was very identifiable about Tracy Tafoya and that he was able to point out in these photos was that she was missing a finger. She had lost a finger in a lawnmower accident.
Well, that's he helps with the right. identification for sure.
Right. So
undeniable.
In basically. Pictures where they couldn't see, her face wasn't visible, her husband was easily able to tell from her body and especially her missing finger,
right?
That yes, this
that's her body.
Yep,
and I know for sure because there's her hand missing the finger.
Yep. Now I said that this thing turned into a circus sideshow, and it did because Joe Naso made the brazen, stupid's probably a better word for it,
right?
Decision
going pro se is he?
Yeah, that he's going to represent himself in this trial.
I don't know why people do that. It's so stupid.
Again, I think he's a narcissist. I think we'll get into it a little bit, but legal analysts openly called this a huge mistake, which how could you not? It was reported that he often seemed confused during the trial. He repeated himself a lot. He rambled. And Gibbs, he just generally didn't have the legal knowledge to combat the evidence against him.
There's good attorneys that won't even do criminal cases because it's so complex, right? I mean, they might be a business attorney, a tax attorney, whatever.
Yeah, real estate.
Yeah, but they're like, I'm not going to, I would never do that. You take somebody that does that all the time. That's who you want.
One analyst on TV said, Naso's pretty bright, but he's not that bright. So in the beginning, right, when Naso says that he's going to represent himself, obviously, as they always do, the judge says, hey, that's not a good idea. You know, they always caution defendants against representing themselves. Naso's talking to the judge and he says, you know what? I'll be okay. I took a business law class in college.
Oh, yeah, that's great. So did I.
Well, whoopty frickin' yeah. do.
Yeah.
I did too. I took business law in college.
You want me to represent you?
No.
No.
I'm sure as shit not going to represent myself in a murder trial where my life is on the line. I mean, really, if you think about it, how many of us normal, regular, non-lawyer type citizens are smart enough in the area of law to combat the state in a murder trial?
Well, that's it. You know, I mean, if you don't have the knowledge, the understanding of how things work, you could be a really smart guy or woman, right? Smart person. You could be a smart person, but if you don't understand how it works, the process behind it, you're gonna end up putting yourself in a jam, man.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, if it was that easy, everybody would do it.
Sure.
There's a reason why you have to go to school for this amount of time. There's a reason why you have to take a state bar exam.
Yeah.
There's a reason why, you know, you have to clerk. You have to do all these different things.
You gotta get experience. Sure. You gotta understand how the processes work. I mean, every case that I've ever been involved in, that I've been sued in or lawsuit that the person represented themselves, always backfired on them. Always. I've never had anybody pro se come out ahead. I'm just telling you, if it doesn't work in the normal day type of business stuff, why the heck, like you said, Mike, why would you ever want to do that to represent yourself for a murder trial?
Well, again, like I said, I think number one, he's a narcissist. I think people, they're fooling themselves if they think that just their brains and their wits alone are going to get them through that type of trial. I mean, seasoned, experienced, very good attorneys.
Yeah.
Don't win all their cases.
No, this is where.
So how the hell are you, Joe Blow Smith, going to go in and, you know?
We're here from, because I know we've got listeners that are attorneys, you know, defense attorneys and prosecutors, ex-prosecutors, and they'll tell you, they probably love when they get somebody that goes up against them pro se.
Why wouldn't they?
I mean, it's like easy dinner.
Yeah. It's like me playing basketball against a 7-year-old. I just swat the ball every time they shoot.
Yeah. And then you play on their little Nerf thing and you slam dunk every time.
When I was a kid, I had the Nerf that clipped down on the top of your door.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you shut the door, it had a little backboard and a little orange.
Yeah, my boy has one of those.
They still make them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I would literally play that for hours. I would watch, this was like early 80s.
Yeah.
I would watch NBA. Yeah. Back then, NBA wasn't like it is today. You could only get it like on Saturdays or something.
Right.
You know, now you can watch a game almost anytime you want. But I would watch it on Saturdays or college basketball on a Saturday and pretend that I was whoever.
Thought you were Larry Bird.
Big fun.
Michael Jordan slamming.
Was really good on
Dr.
Nerf.
J.
I was really good at Nerf basketball. And maybe the strangest thing about it all, Gibbs, was that Joe Naso actually had quite a bit of money. It was said that he had more than $1 million in assets.
Really? And we know he had $150,000 in cash.
In cash, right. Yeah, more than $1 million in assets at the time he was arrested. He had more than enough money to hire a really good
defense attorney.
But I think he just thought, you know what? Why spend all my money when I'm smarter than these people?
Yeah.
And I mentioned him talking to the judge. Apparently, he also told the judge that he had a lot of experience in the courtroom. He had been involved in a number of civil actions over the years. And he said, you know what, Judge? I got a pretty good trial record in these civil proceedings.
It's not the same, mister.
No, it's not.
Not the same.
I guess a lot of these revolved around the care of his son, Charles. I mentioned, you know, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Joe took care of him later in life, into his 40s, I think. But eventually he had to put him in a group home. But he was always suing people around his care or government agencies, things like that. So we get to Joe Naso's opening statement. He's representing himself and he says, this case is about me, my life. I'm not the monster who killed these women. I don't do that. I dated. I danced. I don't kill people. That was his opener.
That was it. That was it.
I date. I dance. I don't kill.
If you saw Mike, he's actually making, what would you even call that? Side-to-side hand movements. It's like you're dancing in your chair.
I was doing the floss. Is that what's that? What's the dance now that?
Oh, the, yeah, don't do that.
Is it the floss?
You never want to do that. No adult should ever do that.
Probably shouldn't.
That's not good for anybody.
So then you get into the trial. And, I mean, what's his defense, right? He doesn't really have much. Number one, he's got to try to attack the evidence. So he comes out and he's talking about these photographs. He's got tons of evidence against him. And he said, you know what? Yeah, I took all these photographs. But number one, they don't prove that I killed anyone. Number two, all the women in these photographs posed for them freely, of their own free will, to help him create what he called his art. And I'm doing air quotes for art. And then when he talked about his diaries and the ledger entries, he said, you know what? It's just fantasy writing of an old man.
Just something I wrote down. It was on my top of my head. I thought, this sounds like an interesting fantasy.
Yeah,
I put it down.
Just a story.
Just happens to be the, you know, exact same area where something happened.
It just happens to line up perfectly. Dates.
Right.
Names. Where bodies were dumped. And I guess he was pretty combative with a lot of the witnesses during the trial. And he got into it at one point with one of the detectives because, you know, I mentioned this earlier. The detectives always referred to his diaries and his journals and all this as a rape journal. I mean, this is what they called it. It's kind of a strange name, but he did talk a lot about rape in his writings. So he asked one of the detectives, why do you keep calling it that? And the detective says, I call it a rape journal because in it you write things such as, I had to rape her. I raped her in an alley. I raped her in the front seat of my car. That's why I call it a rape journal.
Mr. Pro Se, you walked right into that one. Thank you.
So earlier, Gibbs, I mentioned that Naso's ex-wife, Judith, testified at trial. And obviously, since he's representing himself, he's able to cross-examine her. And I'm sure a lot of guys would jump at the chance to cross-examine their ex-wives on the stand. A lot of women would like to cross-examine their ex-husbands as well.
Or their husbands.
Or their current husbands, too. I'd like to ask you a few questions on the stand under oath to get down to some things that I've been wondering about.
I'd probably have to perjure myself.
I guarantee you'd take the fifth.
Well, I'd take the fifth for sure.
So during this cross-examination of his wife, first of all, he's got to try to explain the tape conversation they had in jail, right? We talked about that. That was played for the jury at trial. That was pretty hard to do because it was word for word, and it was him asking her to get their son to go get the stuff out of the safe deposit box. Well, they knew what was in the safe deposit box later on. But he asked his former wife if he had ever physically abused or threatened her, or if she had ever heard of him harming another person. And I guess at one point she said, well, you did tell me shortly after we married that you were charged with rape. And I guess he replied, yeah, but that was back in the 50s.
Yeah, you can't hold that against me. That's a long time ago. It don't count.
That was almost 60 years ago.
Yeah, it don't count. I was a different person then.
But I guess it was almost comical at times. These two going back and forth, you know, she on the witness stand, him cross-examining her. You know, they got into it. They bickered. They argued. The judge had to admonish him a number of times.
Well, probably needed to remind him it's not about your marriage now.
Right.
It's about your trial.
The prosecutor in Naso's case ended her closing arguments by reading some excerpts from his diary, his journals, dating back to the 1950s. And I mentioned the one about the girl in Kansas City.
Sure.
Right, that ended with, had to rape her in my car on a cold winter night. Another one that the prosecutor read was, Rochester, late 1950s, picked up a cute Ukrainian girl, great legs, used to take photos of her. In those days, I would pose as a professional photographer. What a scam.
Oh, yeah.
He's basically laid everything out.
It's pretty full disclosure.
Yeah. So on August 20th, 2013, jury of 6 men, 6 women. They deliberated for about 5 hours.
Not too long, longer than I would expect, but yeah, not too long.
Not too long. Before finding Joseph Naso guilty of all 4 murders. And the judge sentenced him to death. But I guess even that was a sideshow.
Even before the hearing began, 79-year-old serial killer Joe Naso several times flipped off the audience of former jurors, victims' family members, and reporters who had covered the case from the start. And when the judge gave him one last chance to speak before receiving the death sentence, Naso only complained about having to pay his victims' families. He said he should get restitution for being charged. Judge Andrew Sweet called Naso evil, one of those people who make us worry about our kids walking to school, who make us lock our doors at night. He gave Naso death sentences for each of 3 victims, Carmen Colon in Contra Costa County, Pam Parsons and Tracy Tafoya in Yuba County. The judge also said the murders of Roxine Rogash and Sharia Patton in Marin and Sarah Dillon in Nevada County by Naso played a role in his decision.
So how about that, Gibbs? You know, 70, you know, guy in his late 70s. He's been convicted. He's waiting on his sentence. Judge says, hey, got anything you want to say? Well, I'm going to flip off the jury.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn around and I'm going to flip off the victims' families. And you heard the reporter talk about restitution. Because again, Joe had some money and he was ordered to pay money to the victims. I don't know how much it was. I know at one point, I think the judge asked the victims' families to compile information about money they had spent over the years. So, but I think, you know, he was ordered to pay them some restitution. Again, he says, you know what? You should be paying me.
You're crazy, man.
So he was sent to death row at San Quentin. And we covered six of the 10 on NASO's list, right? There were six that police have pretty definitively tied him to. You even heard there in the clip, the judge referenced a couple of the murders that he wasn't charged for. But there are four that investigators have yet to figure out. Number one on the list is an entry that read, girl near Heldsburg, Mendocino County. This one's tough because they can't figure out what Heldsburg is. I guess it's not a city in Mendocino County, California. They think it's just misspelled. Because if you add an A to it, it becomes Healdsburg. And that is a city. But again, there's not much to go on. Just, you know, girl in a city. Number four on the list just read girl on Mount Tam. Not a whole lot to go on there.
No.
Number five on the list said girl from Miami near Down Peninsula. And then number six was girl from Berkeley. Oh, that's not much to go on at all.
No.
A lot of women over the years in Berkeley, California.
Absolutely there was and is.
But this is one of those cases, Gibbs, where, first of all, I got sucked into it because it became fascinating to me the more I researched it. But it's one of those where you can kind of see from the amount of photos, the amount of journal entries, that this guy had a ton of victims. But I don't know that there's any way to ever know the true number.
Probably not. I can't imagine that you ever could.
But I guarantee his sexual assaults probably were in the hundreds. I'm sure he murdered way more than six women.
Oh, I believe that.
Way more.
Yeah. I mean, he's been doing this for at least 50 years and probably more.
Yeah. With sexual assaults for sure.
Yeah, the sexual assaults.
Who knows how long with the murders.
But I think the numbers are low.
I do too. I do too. But it's an interesting case. I liked it once I got into it with the research.
And I like to tie some potential tie-ins
to some unsolved that we might do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we could have timed it better, we could have done the New York alphabet murders on unsolved.
That would have been cool.
At the same time. But
yeah,
that was my fault. I didn't plan it very good. But I think when you have the number of years that the case spanned, how old this guy was when they finally caught up to him, and the fact that he'd just been sitting around journaling his memories of the past of what were just very horrific things that he had done, you know, crimes he had committed against women.
But he didn't see it that way, right?
Oh, I'm sure in his
head
he didn't.
She's beautiful. I was going to marry her. Yeah. You know?
Just like he didn't see why he should have to pay the victim's family's restitution.
Right.
He thought the state should be paying him because, you know, what? Why are you charging me? Why are you dragging me through a trial?
Yeah.
Why is a jury convicting me when I haven't done anything wrong?
Yeah, and I'm here representing myself because clearly I'm that good.
I'm super smart. I'm Matlock and Raymond Burr wrapped into one.
Just like that?
Just like that.
You know, I just think how lucky did the justice system get to catch him at his age? Because literally, he could have got away the rest of his life.
Sure. Yeah, he could have.
He was close.
You know, he could have died before they found out.
Sure. Imagine being that person cleaning out that apartment or that house. Kind of like, hey, let's look through some stuff and find those photos. And
but
those
say, eventually, they were going to find that stuff one way or the other.
Yeah, somebody would have.
Either he died in that house, unless he set the whole thing on fire. I don't know how he was getting rid of all that.
Yeah, had a burn box ready to go to burn the place down.
Exactly. All right, but that is it. That's the case of Joseph Naso. We'll get some voicemails, Gibbs. Check them out.
Let's hear it.
Hey, yo, it's Willie from Boston. How you guys doing? I just recently moved down to Atlanta. Oh, I love it down here in South Georgia. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I just finished up y'all's podcast. Got caught up on TCAT and Unsolved. And, man, y'all do some damn good work, I tell you what. Now, y'all stay safe. Keep y'all's on time ticking. Oh, Gibby. Oh, you so fine. Oh, Gibby, you so fine, you so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Gibby. Hey, Gibby. Hey. Oh, Gibby, you so fine, you so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Gibby. Ooh, ooh. Hey, Gibby. Bye.
I think you got a fan there, brother.
That's the same message you left on my phone. Well, just the last part.
It was actually two different voicemails.
Yeah.
Because he left just the, oh, Gibby, you're so fine.
Yeah.
And then he left another one, so I just put them together.
Yeah. But I got it.
Because I got that kind of skill.
You're good. You're good. You're good at editing.
But I will say, his accents are a little better than yours.
Well, you got to be like that, man.
They were decent. Especially his... I don't know. That might be his real accent. Which the one from Georgia. I don't know. But that was pretty good. The southern twang.
I'm down here down in Georgia. So what he said? That? I'm down in Georgia.
Georgia.
I'm down in Georgia.
That's not a southern accent.
I didn't say it was.
Hi guys, Paul Ring here in St. Louis. Unabashed forensic files junkie. My daughter turned me on to your podcast. I love it. There's one out of St. Louis that you guys really should do. It's Michael Wayne Jackson. Michael Jackson, of course, middle name Wayne. You know what that indicates half the time. Anyway, really cool story. I kind of lived through it, through all the manhunt and everything. Bizarre story. Just thought you guys could check it out. And Gibby, don't let him change you a bit. I love you, man. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Don't go changing.
A lot of people on the Gibby bandwagon.
Saying, don't go changing?
Don't go changing. I wouldn't if I could.
Even if I tried?
Even if I tried. So, Michael Wayne Jackson.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've heard of that one. I'm going to check that out.
Did you jot that down on your list?
Yeah. I'd definitely like to do a story about Michael Jackson.
Yeah, there you go. It's kind of a thriller, actually.
Why don't you moonwalk your ass out of
here? Hey, hey. And whatever did happen to Billie Jean?
I know. Not my lover.
No.
Just a girl.
It's cool how we got a lot of father daughters that listen. Yeah,
and if you think about it, it's a lot of daughters turning their fathers onto the podcast.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they may not know much about podcasts. I mean, my dad didn't know anything about podcasts before I started doing one.
I just think it's neat. So, like, when we go to Crime Con, of course, we meet all the individual people, but then we meet the husbands and wives or the couples in general, mm-hmm. right? And I think this year we're going to see some... I mean, last year we met some mom and daughters.
We did, yeah, mothers and daughters.
I think this year we're going to see more of the father-daughter coming to Crime Con. Yeah. So, it's just cool.
It's a cool trip.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. This is Molly from Michigan, but I am a Michigan State alumni. Go Green. So any, you know, given Saturday of a college football season, we probably have a similar objective. I first found your podcast when I was living last year in Boston, and when I was feeling homesick, it was really nice to be able to turn on an episode of TCAT or Unsolved and hear people that not only sounded like me, but thought about the world the way I was used to thinking about it and related to other people. Like, I am used to relating to other people. And I bet you never even knew that you were doing all of that in the podcast. And I wanted to say thanks. I also have a big idea for a show where we get a Gibby takeover. I can only imagine Gibby running an entire episode. The amount of new Gibby-isms, maybe a record number of K-bar references, and of course, how many new accents the world could be introduced to in the space of one episode. I, again, just want to say thanks for all of your hard work. Very much appreciated. Stay safe and keep you on time ticking.
It's a piece of lot of the accents that I could do.
A Gibby takeover. We thought about that a couple times where I was, you know.
Flip roles?
Yeah, where you would do most of the talking. The problem is the editing.
Just say it. There's not enough time in the day.
It would go from about 4 hours to 3 days.
Yeah, 4 hours to do two podcasts to we're into day two and Gibby's halfway through TCAT.
Oh, yeah, well, taping and editing would take a while.
I think I can do it.
I think you could, too. I have a lot of faith in you, and maybe we'll do that one day.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. It's Dylan Hunter calling from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. I just wanted to say that I really enjoy the show. It keeps me going throughout my shift. I work evenings, and I have a lot of free time, so I often binge listen to all the episodes of True Crime all the time. And, yeah, I just wanted to say that keep up the good work. And there was a case. Her name was Andrea Geisbrecht from where I live in Winnipeg, and she was charged with killing a bunch of her own babies and hiding them in a storage container. I think it'd make a really good episode. Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
All right, calling in from Canada.
Eh?
Take off, eh?
Eh? Take off.
You hoser.
Great white.
It's not a bad word, is it? Hoser?
Hoser? You hoser, you? Well, I don't know.
I used to love that. Started off on SCTV. I used to watch a lot of SCTV. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, I remember that.
John Candy was on there. Eugene Levy.
Dan Aykroyd, maybe?
No, because he was on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. And there was a bunch of people on there.
It's good stuff.
But the one I'm talking about is, I can't remember their names. Oh, Rick Moranis and the other guy. They did the two Canadians, Great White North.
Yeah, who were they?
I just said Rick Moranis. I can't remember the other guy's name, though.
Why can't you remember him?
Because he didn't go on to be as famous as Rick Moranis.
Is that what it is?
But I used to watch that a lot.
Was Rick Moranis really famous?
He was in Honey, I Blew Up.
The Kids,
like,
twice?
14 movies.
Yeah. Oh, and he was in Ghostbusters.
He was in one, like,
twice.
Two.
Yeah.
At least the second one, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, he was the gatekeeper, the key master or something.
Okay. No, he was. He had a good run.
Yeah, I'm sure he made a bunch of money.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for voicemails. We had mailbag.
Did we have mailbag?
Yep. Lisa Andrews sent us a huge box, probably the biggest box we've ever gotten.
Really?
It was like 10 things.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
It was like 10 different things of beef jerky.
Really?
Oh my, it was just chock full of beef jerky.
You must knew that we needed some soul food.
And she must have heard me say I like green olives. There was a little bottle of green olives.
That's be for you because it's not for me.
Chocolate bars. There was a couple Harley chips. It was just a huge box.
That's awesome. Thank you
so,
for
yeah,
that.
So, yeah, Lisa, we appreciate that very much. All right, Gibbs, that is it.
Is that it?
That's it for the case of Joseph Naso.
Hey, follow Gibby at True Crime Gibby on Instagram. Just follow me.
What for?
Just because.
All right.
Do it.
All right.
You too.
I'm not following you.
You need to do it.
I don't want to see all the weird inspirational quotes.
It's good stuff, man.
That you put up there.
Jump over. There's good stuff. Jump over.
It's like looking at a bunch of Hallmark cards, one after the other.
Oh, by Gibby. Hallmark by Gibby. I wonder if I could call Hallmark and get a side gig.
You can't even say Hallmark.
I just said Hallmark.
You didn't come out right. all right, folks. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.